In the last church that I served, I had a saying that I made up. And I used my saying everywhere I went, in worship and in classes and in hallways and in my office and outside the church. And so on my last Sunday in that place, one of the members came and presented me with a little gift. And inside the white tissue paper was this paperweight. And printed on the paperweight was my little saying that I had made up. It has the United Methodist cross and flame on one side and my name at the bottom. And at the top is my little saying. Are you ready to hear it? The fundamental principles of Christianity are relational, not doctrinal. The fundamental principles of Christianity are relational, not doctrinal. It's not the doctrines of our faith that are most important. Now, they are important. And what we believe is critical to who we are. But the things that we believe as Christians are not an end in themselves. They are a means to an end. Christian faith is about relationships. It is about being connected to God and connected to each other in love. That is the point and the purpose of Christian faith. The things that we believe, the doctrines of our faith, are intended to create and enhance and guide and heal those relationships, particularly our relationship with God. There were many people in Jesus' day, many religious people, who had it backwards, just like many people today. They had it backwards. They spent their time and their energy imposing on one another restrictive rules and rigid expectations for what they needed to believe and how they needed to conduct their daily lives. One of my favorite ones is this. We all know that it is not lawful to do any work on the Sabbath. But in order to follow that rule, you must define what work is. Well, one of the things that we do that is work is carrying a burden, carrying things. That's one form of work. But in order to avoid carrying a burden that is work that violates the Sabbath law, we have to define what a burden is. So the ancient rabbis spent a lot of time talking about that. And here are just three of their conclusions. If a tailor walks out of his home on the Sabbath with a pin accidentally stuck in his robe, he has carried a burden and thus has done work and has violated the Sabbath law. If you pick up a pen that holds more ink than is necessary to write two letters of the alphabet, then you have carried a burden and thus committed the sin that violates the Sabbath law. If you pick up a container that holds more water than is required for two sips, then you have carried a burden and violated the Sabbath law. Here, into those kinds of things, those kinds of, well, they sound ridiculous to us. Into those kinds of things, they invested their energy rather than into the people surrounding them who were in need of comfort and companionship and friendship and help. And it is in that context that we see this marvelous story of Jesus and his encounter with the Pharisees. It's a great story for two reasons. First of all, it's a great story because of the drama. Notice how it starts out. The Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees. Isn't that marvelous? He had gotten the best of the Sadducees, so the Pharisees rolled up their arms and said, "Step aside, fellas. Step aside. We'll show you how it's done." And they go in to take Jesus on. Or another image that I like is that a bunch of cowpokes have just beaten up little Joe in town, and so Hoss jumps on his horse to go back in there and defend his brother. That's the kind of setting, the kind of drama that is going on here. The Pharisees heard how he had silenced the Sadducees, and so they went to take Jesus on themselves. And they sent in their best guy. He just happened to be a lawyer. And you've got to be pretty smart to be a lawyer. So he's the one who goes in to test Jesus. And his question was a masterful one. Yet another one. You remember last week's question. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? And how Jesus dealt with it? Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and to God that which is God's. Well, this week's question, no less masterful. What is the most important of the laws? What is the greatest of the laws? Well, Jesus was caught. If he looked at the law, at the Ten Commandments, and he argued that the first commandment was the most important one and the greatest one, well then, his adversary was prepared to argue that the second one was more important and the greatest one. If Jesus chose the fourth, then his adversary would choose the ninth or whatever. But again, Jesus responds with an unanticipated and brilliant answer. He was asked, what is the most important of the laws, the most indispensable of the Ten Commandments? And Jesus' response was not to name one of the laws, but instead to summarize and to state the purpose of the law. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And then don't overlook Jesus' concluding statement. It is vitally important. On these two hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, that's what it's all been about, folks. That's what all the law and all the legalism and all the doctrines of our faith are intended to get us to. You shall love God and each other. That's the purpose. That's the whole point. But can it really be that simple? Can it be that that's it? Love? Love is what it's all about. You shall love God and each other. That's all there is to it. It sounds almost trite, doesn't it? But maybe that is it. In all its simplicity, but still being profound. If you are my disciple, Jesus says, you will bathe your every action. You will govern your every word. You will judge your every thought by the standard of God's love for you. If you are my disciple, you will demonstrate love for others in response to God's love for you. There's a wonderful little book that came out not too many years ago by a man named Harley Rusch. His book was entitled Dudley's Dog Days. Now, Dudley was a puppy. He was a Cocker Spaniel puppy that Harley's family had just purchased. And they decided to take their new puppy over to Grandma's house to introduce the new member of the family. But on their way, they stopped at an ice cream store. And of course, Dudley got an ice cream cone, the same as everybody else in the family did. And then, as they made their way toward Grandma's house, they also stopped at a hamburger stand for some food. Now, if I ever have the chance to talk to Mr. Rusch, I'm going to ask him how come they stopped at the ice cream store first and the hamburger stand second. But that's the way the story goes. And of course, when everyone in the car got a hamburger, why, so did Dudley. And after eating the ice cream cone, and keeping in mind that Dudley was just a puppy, the hamburger was just a little too much. And he lost it all in the car, and it was quite a mess. And you know, as soon as they arrived at Grandma's house and the kids ran in, the first story they told Grandma was what had just happened to the puppy. And so Mr. Rusch received from his mother the appropriate tongue lashing for misappropriately feeding this brand new puppy. How could you give a puppy an ice cream cone? Don't you know anything about taking care of a puppy? Well, and then the author wrote about his experience. He said, "We were inexperienced in showing love to a puppy. Though we loved him at first sight and wanted him to be a part of our family, the ways in which we showed our love to him needed a lot of improvement. It wouldn't be the last time either. There was the first walk and the first trip to the vet and the first night. All of those things proved that we needed to know more than we knew about how to love a puppy." Well, if that's the case in loving puppies, it's even more so the case in loving each other, and even more than that, in loving God. Our society has told us by means of movies and television and other media that love is something that just happens. Caring for another is just something that you do. How wrong can they be? To love takes the desire, of course, but it also takes practice and persistence and preparation and perspiration. Harley Rusch concludes, "We discovered with Dudley that there are proper and correct ways for us to show our love for our puppy. There are also things that are motivated by love that are all wrong, that we should not do, like giving him ice cream cones and hamburgers." Jesus calls for us to love God and to love each other. And the kind of love that we are charged with demonstrating is not just warm feelings. It involves even more than love for a puppy. It involves practice and persistence and preparation and perspiration. One of the things that makes me grateful for the opportunity that I have to walk the way of discipleship with you here at First Church is that I see that in you day by day. I see the work that you do, the practice and the preparation and the persistence that you practice in ministry, and that you are determined are going to shape and mold and perfect the love that you have for God and for each other. It is a privilege for me to be a part of who you are here in this family at First Church. But there are ways that we need to continue to perfect our discipleship, to practice the kind of severe, taxing, energetic love that God expects from us. It isn't easy. It takes practice and persistence.